Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures, telling stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character for over 50 years. Details at texancultures.utsa.edu.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The COVID-19 crisis has laid bare many flaws in our society that previously have been ignored by policymakers. One of them is the problem that we have with the lack of access to health care due to the lack of health insurance, mainly for the low income and for communities of color. Now, because of the economic fallout and unemployment, millions are losing their health insurance right when many need it the most. What role does health insurance play in the COVID-19 crisis? How has the Affordable Care Act become an important safety net right now? Should Texas finally expand Medicaid? And will workers be able to afford commercial health insurance after the pandemic? You can call in, tell us how you're experiencing this pandemic in perspective with your health insurance. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Did you lose your health insurance? How are you going to cope with that? You can also email us at thesource@tpr.org, tweet at us at tprsource, and again, the number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We're joined this hour by Dr. Sue Bornstein, the internal medicine physician and board trustee for the Texas Medical Association. Dr. Sue Bornstein, welcome to The Source.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Also with us, Elena Marks, President and CEO of the Episcopal Health Foundation and Health Policy Fellow at Rice University's Baker Institute for Public Policy. Elena Marks, good to have you today.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
And Ken Yonda is with us, founder of the Texas-based healthcare consultancy Wild Blue Health Solutions and an adjunct professor in business at Rice University and also at the University of Houston College of Medicine. And Ken Yonda, welcome to The Source.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
So Dr. Sue Bornstein, if you could tell us what's the thinking right now with health insurance coverage with what's happening with COVID-19?
Well, it's a fairly dire situation, I would say. And I think we have to look back to pre-COVID days and realize that we had some pretty significant challenges in Texas prior to COVID, and including things like very high deductibles for people that have insurance, things like narrow networks that have a tendency to keep people from going to see their physician when they really needed to. And so I think those pre-existing issues with health insurance in Texas, not to mention what you said earlier, that we're not proud of the fact that we have had the highest percentage of uninsured people in the country for a long time. So pre-existing issues with high deductibles, narrow networks, high cost, and now the huge problem with that we have so many people unemployed, and the fact that our state has chosen not to expand Medicaid, it's really a recipe for disaster.
So, Dr. Sue Bornstein, this issue with health insurance and the fact that Texas has the highest rate of uninsured in Texas, is that a situation that could make the COVID-19 crisis here in Texas all the more worse, because many people are very reluctant to seek out health care, go to a doctor or hospital, because they don't have a way to pay for it?
Absolutely. And so now you have, right, the fact that people are reluctant to begin with to go to the hospital to seek care. And now they're especially reluctant to do so because of the fear of contracting COVID. So now I hear stories about people that are having symptoms of a heart attack, really true symptoms of a heart attack, that have chosen not to pursue care in an emergency department because they're concerned about COVID. So yeah, it's layering on to the existing problem that we've had with high level of uninsured.
Elena Marks, President and CEO of the Episcopal Health Foundation. Y'all did a study looking at health insurance options for Texans following job loss. What did y'all find?
Well, it was actually the Kaiser Family Foundation that did the big study, and what we did was amplify some of the data regarding Texas. So you have to start from the understanding that about half of Texans got their health insurance through employers. And so once people started losing their jobs, they were losing the health insurance that came with their jobs, and not only the people who were employed, but their family members who may have also been on that plan. And so what this analysis did was look at the claims for unemployment. So it's a conservative estimate of the people who have actually lost jobs. And then it extrapolated from that the number of Texans that could become uninsured following job loss. And that number is 1.6 million Texans. And this includes both the person who is employed and family members. And immediately, like if they lost their job last month, they would be eligible right now for Medicaid or for subsidized marketplace plans. And what the numbers show is that about a third of the people who will be losing health insurance coverage because of job losses, they are eligible for Medicaid today without expansion. Most of those are probably kids who are dependents of adults who lost their jobs and therefore lost their insurance. We also see that about 55% of those people who are losing their job-related health insurance are eligible today for a subsidized plan in the ACA marketplace. And what we know, however, is that when we get to the end of the year, the people that we're talking about who lost their jobs in the first 2 months, assuming that they are still unemployed, and as unemployment grows, it's a good bet that they may still be unemployed. What really happens that's so alarming is that come 2021, the beginning of 2021, so many more people will fall into the coverage gap because we have an expanded Medicaid. And let me explain how that happens. So currently, Texas Medicaid is a very narrow, very limited program. It basically covers pretty poor kids, poor pregnant women, and disabled people. So a lot of the people who are working are never going to be eligible for Medicaid as it currently exists. Right now, some of them are eligible for subsidized plans in the marketplace, ironically, because they will have had some income this year. The marketplace provides subsidies for people between 100% and 400% of the federal poverty level. So you can't be too poor or you can't get those subsidies. And that's what we refer to as the coverage gap. So come 2021, those people who have lost their jobs early this year will have no new income, and therefore they are likely to fall into the coverage gap. They won't make enough money to get a subsidized marketplace plan, and yet they make too much money for Medicaid, because basically if you're a childless adult, there is no Medicaid for you, and so they fall into the coverage gap. And so what we're expecting to see, just based on the people who lost their jobs in the first 2 months, is almost a 50% increase
right.
in
so
the number.
So there needs to be some policy going forward to address this coming problem that Texas is going to face with accessibility to health care. We're going to talk about that when we come back from the break. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Do you think it's time that Texas expanded Medicaid as it can under the Affordable Care Act? This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about health insurance in the time of COVID-19 and after COVID-19. What could we be looking at with the cost of commercial health insurance after the pandemic finally gets sorted out, whenever that might be. And we invite you to call in if you've lost your job and your health insurance. What does that mean for you? Have you not gone to the doctor because you don't have health insurance? And what can you imagine how this might be amplified through our society and making our health public health situation even worse? The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. So far, we've talked about how the Affordable Care Act is available for people who have lost their jobs. There is eligibility for ACA health coverage following job loss during the COVID-19 pandemic. And this is something that has won over converts to the Affordable Care Act, including Texas Senator John Cornyn, who has voted at least 20 times in the past to abolish the ACA. But now he says it's a good news situation for folks to sign up for the Affordable Care Act if you've lost your job under these terrible circumstances. So we'll see if we're going to get more converts and if that's going to change the political landscape moving forward and that Texas can finally expand Medicaid. The number again is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Also with us today, Ken Yanda, founder of the Texas-based healthcare consultancy Wild Blue Health Solutions. And Ken, talk about how are we dealing with the new reality with COVID-19 and maybe some past positions that people held about health insurance and about expanding Medicaid and about the Affordable Care Act. Now they're having to deal with it's a new situation, and so they have to come to grips with that.
Absolutely. I would one of the things I just wanted to clarify on your comment about Senator Cornyn and the availability of the Affordable Care Act. You know, there's people who had employer-sponsored insurance and who now lose their coverage are eligible to have a subsidy under the Affordable Care Act and buy an individual policy. But those people who were working and uninsured, and there are millions of Texans who have jobs and work for small employers that don't offer health insurance or otherwise do not have coverage, they are not able to buy an individual policy right now under the Affordable Care Act. Because they're not eligible for what's called a special enrollment period. And so those people who were previously uninsured, and again, we're probably talking maybe 2 million people in Texas, cannot buy an ACA policy right now because the federal government has decided not to allow that to happen. There was originally a proposal after COVID happened to open up, to have a special enrollment period for all people, including people who were previously uninsured. And the federal government made a decision not to do that. And so I would ask Senator Cornyn and others to encourage the president to start open enrollment for anybody, either because they lost their job and were previously insured or previously uninsured and still uninsured. They need insurance right now, too, because of the risk of COVID and because of the risk of other diseases, which is also what worries me a whole lot. I hope that we can expand coverage even to those who are currently uninsured.
And to be clear, to put a fine point on it, that expansion of enrollment, reopening of enrollment to the Affordable Care Act was specifically opposed by President Donald Trump. Let me go to a caller that we have right now, 833-877-8255, and Janet. Janet, thanks for calling in. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for listening to me. I'm one of those people that have not been insured for about 10 years. I lost my insurance due to a divorce. And since then, I've got a myriad of health problems. And since then, I have been one of the ones who hasn't been able to get my health situation straightened out. I'm still struggling with things that I should have been able to get under control because I don't have any health coverage. And there is the CareLink option in San Antonio. I moved out of the rural area and into the city. And now I'm on CareLink. I just got it, so I don't even know how well it works yet. But I know that I'm still being charged, and I just got a $1,500 bill, even through CareLink, for some tests that I had done. And I don't know how to pay those. I make very little money, and I can't even. And when I called into the, I was one of the ones who called in for getting Obamacare coverage, but I couldn't because I fell into.
She fell into the gap.
Okay, children, and didn't make enough money to get on it.
All right, Janet, thank you for that call. You really brought some reality to the conversation. We hear from folks like you who are dealing with these terrible circumstances. Dr. Sue Bornstein with the Texas Medical Association, when you hear from callers like Sue who tell you, you know, they have health conditions, they have children that they're taking care of, but they don't have health insurance and they get billed for things, that that money's got to come from somewhere. Where does that come from?
Well, it's, and Janet, I certainly empathize with you, and I feel bad that you are having to deal with this in addition to your health issues. So, yeah, that it's a problem. And you know that even, again, pre-COVID, that medical debt was, I think, the second highest cause, either the first or second highest cause of personal bankruptcy in this country. That's just not right. That is simply not right. And so I would say communities like San Antonio have been very innovative with the CareLink that you mentioned. Dallas, where I'm from, the Parkland clinics try to meet the needs of folks that don't have insurance. Austin has a good system. And practically every community in the state has a clinic, a community-based clinic. But that still doesn't meet the need. And so I think your caller's story really encapsulates and puts a human face on the challenges that working people in this state have with obtaining health insurance coverage. And we have to find solutions. We have to.
Okay, another caller, Yolanda. Yolanda, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I love listening to y'all, and this is a great topic. My comment is that when I lost my job due to COVID-19, that I had to get new insurance, and COBRA was more than my house payment, quite a bit. So I decided to go on the marketplace to see if I could get it more affordable, which I thought I did. So you're going from a PPO to an HMO. And with that, there's some regulations for that. So my comment is that just recently, after I got myself set up with new insurance for me and my family, that I got a letter from Blue Cross Blue Shield saying that the insurance that I purchased from the marketplace doesn't meet regulations for Texas. So now I have to start all over again because I want to make sure things are covered and then I'm not going to get dinged or something because I'm not applying correctly for the regulations for Texas.
All right, Yolanda, thank you for that. Ken Yanda, as a healthcare consultant at Wild Blue Health Solutions, do you hear problems like Yolanda's before? Like she tried to get COBRA. COBRA's very expensive. I never understood that. You lose your job, they tell you to sign up for COBRA, and it's so expensive right when you have no money. So how does that work?
Yeah. Well, COBRA is expensive because employer-sponsored insurance is expensive. And so when you take away the employer subsidy, people for the first time sort of recognize how much their employer's total cost is, plus like a 2 or 3% add-on. I don't know what specifically happened in her situation with why there would be a problem with the Blue Cross plan. If she went and purchased it through healthcare.gov, on the ACA, that should be a compliant plan. I'm sorry I can't help without knowing more details of her specific situation, but frankly, the people at Blue Cross should be able to help her work through that situation. And because she lost her job, she should be eligible for a pretty significant subsidy and be able to get an ACA policy. Yes, it's going to be an HMO, but it's going to be a lot less than COBRA.
Elena Marks at the Episcopal Health Foundation. What is driving your pursuit of trying to figure this all out? This is so complicated. I hear about all this, and it's really hard for me to keep track of. I mean, why is it so hard?
It's so hard because we don't actually have a unified national or even state system for accessing health care. It is a very patchwork group of regulations at the local, state, and federal level. And rather than reinvent the wheel every time we go at this, we build on what we have. And so we've ended up with somewhat of a Frankenstein's monster. What the Affordable Care Act tried to do was to create a way for every citizen, not for undocumented populations, but for other residents to access affordable health insurance. And it did it by saying the lowest income people would be eligible for Medicaid, including an expanded Medicaid. And it did it for the next group of people by saying they would be eligible for subsidies in the ACA marketplace for commercial plans, recognizing that most people were still getting their health insurance through their employers, the most expensive kind, as Ken just said. What happened was the opportunity to have a system that did provide affordable coverage to everyone through the ACA was taken away when the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that Medicaid expansion was optional for each state. And so the 36 states that expanded Medicaid actually have an affordable option for everyone, regardless of income level. But the 14 states, including Texas, who didn't, created a coverage gap by leaving people who were between 100% of poverty, or below 100% of poverty, out.
And so we're left in here. I keep coming back to the fact that we're in a pandemic, COVID-19. Many, if you catch it, you could become asymptomatic and you may be fine, or you could really get sick and you get put on a ventilator. And then if you survive, what kind of health and what kind of bills would you be facing on the other side of that? Dr. Sue Bornstein, I mean, you could be bankrupt by getting COVID.
Well, you could be, but I do want to mention the fact that because of the actions of the Texas Department of Insurance and our governor, directed the payers, the health insurance payers, pretty specifically about things that they should do, should not do in the time of COVID. Now, remember that these are voluntary things, most of them, but Certainly, they were encouraged to waive penalties and things like for out-of-network bills, to waive things for pre-authorization, et cetera, et cetera. You also know that most of them are waiving testing, things like that. As far as what you would end up looking at, I don't know that there's any difference what you would be looking at a bill from the ICU on a ventilator for a number of days. I don't know that is covered or waived under the COVID rules. And I think Ken is certainly more familiar with the specifics of that. But I think it's very possible that you could end up with a very, very big, very substantial medical bills if you were fortunate enough to survive the illness.
And Ken, in about a minute, what would that look like?
Well, short term, it's not a big concern because for people who are uninsured, the federal government has said they will pick up the costs, the uncompensated care from the hospital. So hopefully you won't get balanced bill for that, but you will probably at first. And you're probably looking at, if you're in intensive care, you're looking at a $100,000 bill for being hospitalized for COVID. So it's a lot of money, but you should be able to work through that. If you have insurance, it will be covered. And most of the insurance companies are covering it in full. So it's not so bad short term. I'm more worried about the long term impacts of people that don't get the care that they need and what's going to happen because the system is sort of shut down. And that's going to be a real problem going forward. It's COVID is bad enough, but we're multiplying the problem.
And people are losing health insurance because they're losing their jobs. Whether or not they're going to find new jobs with health insurance as well is a big question mark when we get through the COVID-19 crisis. And what does that mean for everyone else? I mean, there are predictions that your premiums for health insurance could go up 40% or more next year because of what's happening right now, even though the major health insurance corporations right now are making big profits. We're going to be talking about that and more, get some comments from you about how you're dealing with health insurance and COVID-19 and what are your concerns. 833-877-8255. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Over 79 million Americans have problems with medical bills or medical debt. 64% of Americans avoid or delay medical care due to fear of medical debt. Texas hospitals continue to sue patients as 1.3 million Texans filed for unemployment during the COVID-19 pandemic. What is happening with health insurance in the COVID-19 times? You can call in, tell us how it's impacting you. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And we're joined by Armando. Armando, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. It comes down to the vote, if I may say so. When we go and vote in the polls, and we need to do that, and we need to do it very educated and knowledgeable about the fact that we have people that fight against social medicine and those that support corporate medicine. And I'm talking about our governor. I'm talking about legislators. I'm talking about state reps, senators, et cetera, and our on the federal, state, even local level. And what I'm getting at is that it's your money. It's your tax money. It's your own hard work money. Are you going to give it to somebody to tell you later, a corporation, how what you could be covered for? And that's the big challenge. People need to understand that.
Okay, Armando, thank you for the call. Dr. Sue Bornstein, internal medicine physician, board trustee for the Texas Medical Association. Basically, what Armando is saying, that these are the policies that Texas has. We don't have expanded Medicaid, and we have a lot of harsh rules. We have limited Medicaid because these are the laws that have been passed by the lawmakers who have been put into office by Texas voters. So this is part of our representative democracy. I mean, yes,
it is. It is. And decisions like that have been made, but that doesn't mean that decisions like that cannot be changed. Not. It seems to me that in this unprecedented pandemic that we find ourselves in terms of, again, you know, now all the people that were previously uninsured, 18% or whatever, 18 to 20%, and now we're going to add the 1.6 million more people. It seems to me that even conservative legislators who are fiscally conservative have to really look at that and say, in my opinion, and this is my personal opinion, this is threatening the Texas miracle. If we have rampant unemployment like we do, and we have rampant numbers of uninsured or underinsured people in Texas, that is not a recipe for long-term success. And I would also say that in terms of Medicaid expansion, just on the simplest level, it seems that I have been surprised that more people are not sort of swayed by the fact that these are our dollars. These Medicaid expansion funds that go to other states are really belong to Texas. And so as a true proud Texan, you know, I think most of us want to say, let's bring the money back to Texas where it belongs. And then we can help take care of the folks that live here. I want to expand on something that has been hinted at and alluded to earlier. And that is that Elena talked about the states that have and have not expanded Medicaid. And we know there's pretty good data that people are healthier in the state or becoming healthier in the states that have expanded Medicaid. So it's not just a payment thing as much as it is. It's really a benefit to people's health. And one of the most dramatic things that's happened in states that have expanded Medicaid is increased treatment options for substance use disorder and behavioral health issues, which is a chronically underfunded and services that have poor access in this state. So there are many, many benefits that can accrue to accepting Medicaid expansion or something like that. So,
Elena Marks, the president and CEO of the Episcopal Health Foundation, do you want to expand on that or bring us more?
Yeah. I do. We have a false narrative among some policymakers in this state that says Medicaid is a broken program and we shouldn't add anyone to it because it needs to be fixed. And that's actually a false narrative. There's a lot of public polling opinion survey data that shows that Medicaid is actually a very popular program, including by people who aren't directly on it. It affects so many families that many, many Texans have an experience with and an opinion on Medicaid, and that opinion is positive, including regarding Medicaid expansion. And when you hear people say, oh, it's a bad program, why should we expand it? It's simply false. We also sometimes hear a false narrative that there aren't enough doctors who are willing to take Medicaid patients. And that's actually not true either. The Medicaid plans all have to have a certain robustness to their network, and they're able to meet those criteria. And so while Medicaid may not be any provider's favorite source of payment, there are an ample number of providers who are eager to take more Medicaid patients. And if we stop that false narrative that Medicaid's a bad program and we shouldn't expand it, then maybe we can actually talk about how popular Medicaid is and why we should expand it.
So, Elena Marks, what form would expanding Medicaid take in Texas? Who would it cover?
It would cover essentially the childless parents of working adults. So you're talking about people who make any amount of money up to 138% of the federal poverty level. And you're talking about a million or more Texans who are currently unable to find affordable insurance. And they are people who work in service industries, who work in agriculture. Most of them are employed. They just don't make enough to buy insurance on their own, or they don't have an affordable product offered by their employer, or they work for a small employer who doesn't offer insurance at all. We're talking about hardworking Texans who are simply out of luck because there is not an affordable option without a public subsidy, and our state has created a coverage gap in public subsidies, and it doesn't have to be that way.
Let's go back to the phone lines, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Angus is on the line. Angus, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi there. Thanks for having me on.
All right. You go ahead.
So my situation is I've been working at my company for about 5 months now, and I deliver wine for a living full-time. And I was told when I was onboarded that I have 90 days before I'm eligible, which I never got that. I'm like, oh, I better not get hurt right after I got hired. But in any case, at about the 2 month period, I reached out to my manager and said, okay, well, what do I have to do to enroll? And he said, I don't really know, actually. I contact HR department and they say, oh, no, he was wrong. Who told you that? You were supposed to enroll on January at your 30-day mark. So now that it's February 15th, you can't enroll for the year 2020. So I could work 80 hours a week if I wanted to, and I still just have to cross my fingers and hope for the best.
And there's no remedy for that?
I mean, it's possible I can go out of network. I'm just an average uninformed citizen here. But as far as the company is concerned, they have no interest in helping me. They went straight to some federal script that they had in front of them. Once I asked them, is this really true? Am I really out of luck just because my boss gave me the wrong information?
Mm. Ken Yanda, founder of the Texas-based healthcare consultancy Wild Blue Health Solutions, what do you take on that?
Well, that would be certainly something that I would try to take up with my employer and possibly even, depending on the size, if it's a fully insured program, then you could also go to the Texas Department of Insurance and say, if you were misinformed about when you were supposed to sign up, you should be able to sign up now. That seems like not a correct answer. Again, it's hard to know without all the details of the situation, but he should certainly push back on his employer and then go to Texas Department of Insurance and say, I was given incorrect information. I should be able to sign up for insurance right now.
Elena Marks, Angus's situation is a perfect illustration of many of the traps and wrong ways that people get caught up in systems while they're trying to play by the rules and do the right thing in order to get health insurance for themselves and their family and for the community. And then they get left out in the cold. I mean, it sounds like, oh, this is a one in a million type of a thing, but stuff like this happens all the time.
Right, and I think it goes back to the fact that we don't have a unified national policy or program for ensuring that everybody does get coverage. And so you're constantly going to have people who are an exception to one of the many, many rules that we have. Angus's situation is one of the reasons that there are a number of advocates who advocate for a single-payer system so that you wouldn't have these opportunities for people to fall through the cracks because there would just be one system.
A single-payer system, we heard a lot about that and what that might look like during the heyday of the Democratic primaries, and we'll see if that becomes something that we see in the upcoming presidential election, if that becomes a main topic. And this is certainly a highly partisan issue. That's one reason why Texas has not expanded Medicaid so far. And what that looks like right now as we're dealing with the insurance options for Texans who have lost jobs due to COVID-19. We're going to continue our conversation. We invite you in. The number is 833-TPR-TALK, 833-877-8255. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Health insurance, many of us depend on it, at least to give us some sort of psychological cover and make feel like, oh, at least I know I have health insurance right now during COVID-19. But what if you don't? What if you lost your job and then you lost your health insurance? And now you've got to figure out how to survive in this harsh, cold world. How are you going to do that? The number is 833-877-8255. Tell us how this is impacting you. And Ken Yonda with the Wild Blue Health Solutions, I have read that it's possible the next year we're going to see huge jumps in health insurance premiums. Is that to be expected?
I think early on there was some expectation of that because of the extra costs that COVID was bringing to the insurance companies. But what's actually happened is that because people are not getting other treatments, actually the insurance companies are doing quite well right now. So I'm anticipating that those will kind of offset each other. And so I think I'll be very surprised if rate increases are not still pretty moderate for next year. So I think those initial 40% is overblown, but it could very well be some smaller double digits. So still 10-20% increase would be still a big hit to lots of people.
And the losing of all these people from health insurance rolls, does that shrink the risk pool? Does that matter, Ken?
It certainly could. I don't think that in the individual insurance market, I think it potentially is going to grow because some of those people who have lost employer-sponsored insurance, and so the individual plans and under the ACA may not be as impacted as much as some employer-sponsored plans, where they may have lost people that were actually younger and healthier, and so they're going to have higher costs because the people that remain employed may be older and sicker.
But so, Dr. Sue Bornstein, I wonder, the fact that health insurance companies, Cigna and these all the big ones, are reporting big profits right now because people aren't going to the doctor and they're not getting medical treatment that they might need. Maybe they've got a creaky knee and so they're going to wait until they get that knee replacement. But so we're going to have a pent-up demand, or at least this is an indicator that people are not getting health care that they actually do need right now. And so we could see a dam burst when we finally get through the situation now. Is that something that you've noticed?
Absolutely, and it's true. And so people, we know that the people are delaying the care that they need. For example, following up on their chronic medical conditions, whether it's diabetes, high blood pressure, heart disease, depression. Yes, there is. There's increasing evidence that that is in fact happening, and so one can easily figure out what happened. There probably will be more complications associated or from those, more heart attacks, more vascular disease, more eye problems, for example, people that don't get their care for diabetes. So yes, it's kind of seen as the secondary wave, if you will, the secondary effects of what we're experiencing with COVID. I would also say one thing about people that are find themselves without insurance and find themselves in the coverage gap. And I would caution about one thing, and that is it's very appealing to find some cheaper insurance, something like an association health plan, which have gained popularity recently. But they don't necessarily, I mean, some of them are very good, but they don't necessarily meet the 10 essential benefits that the Affordable Care Act came out with, and they frequently will not cover people for pre-existing. So just buyer beware. If you start looking to buy insurance in different markets, you need to do that with your eyes wide open to see what you're buying.
So this is the very light coverage that you may say, well, I found this great deal, but right. Then when you look at it, you find out that you're very exposed. The other point I want to get to, Elena Marks, the president and CEO of Episcopal Health Foundation, is how there is a racial disparity here with who is losing health insurance, who doesn't have coverage, who is being impacted by COVID-19. We're seeing that this is something that is heavily impacting people of color.
Absolutely, and it should be a surprise to no one. We have decades of structural inequities throughout our system, and COVID is just bringing them to light. People of color historically have had lower incomes, lower educational attainments, poorer housing choices, higher rates of uninsurance, and many other negative factors. And it's due to patterns that go back decades, I would say centuries, to the time of slavery, when we set up rules that systemically discriminated over centuries against certain groups of people. And what we're seeing in the area of COVID is all of that is laid bare. The same way when we went through Hurricane Harvey in the Houston area, the people who were hardest hit and had the hardest time recovering were people of color and very low-income people who were already behind the eight ball to begin with. This is nothing new. When we rebuild this system, we have an opportunity to correct those inequities.
And Dr. Sue Bornstein, the communities of color are being particularly hit hard by COVID-19, correct?
Absolutely, and I am such a big fan of both Elena and Ken's, and they're really inspirational leaders, and I'm proud to call both of them my friends. I would just expand a little bit on what Elena said. So not only in the African American communities, Latinx communities, if you look at one of the most stark examples of these racial and structural inequities, it's in the Native American populations. If you look at the Navajo Nation, it has been being decimated. And it's interesting, and people might not appreciate this, but there are something like 2 million households in the United States of America in 2020 that do not have running water. Just think about that. So what do we tell people to do? We tell people to wash their hands thoroughly and frequently. Well, if you don't have running water, you know, or if you live in a multi-generational household, as people do in many different communities, or if you rely on public transport to get to your job, if you still have a job, you are structurally, again, I use that word that Elena used, at higher risk. Or if you're an essential worker, someone that works in a healthcare facility, women in particular, women that work in healthcare are really disproportionately exposed to COVID. So Elena is 100% right. We have the opportunity. We have to make structural changes. There's just no reason that we can't do that in this country.
Another caller, Kenny. And Kenny, thanks for calling in. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, I have a question. I'm self-employed, as is my wife, and I've found that in Texas, when I compare the plans that are available to us to plans that I hear about other people talking about and buying in other states who own small businesses, ours are really, really bad. I find that there's very, very narrow networks, and many of the doctors in network I can't actually use because they won't take a new patient. And so I don't have insurance, even though I should be able to afford it, because I found it to be not useful. And I would love to know what I can potentially do to work on that, or where the disconnect is.
All right, Kenny, thank you for that. Ken Yanda, you're a consultant, a Wild Blue Health Solutions. First of all, is that true? Is it slim pickings for self-employed people like Kenny?
Well, it depends on where you live. If you're in a rural community, yes, it is slim picking. So Blue Cross is in all 254 counties. But in the more urban areas, so in the San Antonio market, for example, there's a number of different carriers that are there. Some of them do have fairly narrow networks, and it is correct that it's almost all HMO type plans that are available for individuals. But
in other states, would he have better choices in other states?
There are better choices actually in states that have set up their own state based health insurance exchange. So
in Texas,
California,
did not.
Right. Texas has the federally facilitated marketplace and actually has taken a very hands off approach to that. And so in other states, where they have encouraged insurance companies more to provide different kinds of options, they certainly have done that. But I would say the market in Texas is growing. There are more carriers now than there were a few years ago, and some of the bigger ones are coming back. So, for example, United Healthcare is going to come back in 2021. And so there's encouraging signs there. I would also look, some people that had skinny networks 2 years ago have filled out their networks a little bit more. So I think the individual market is actually potentially going to continue to expand and do much better. So don't give up on it yet.
Sue Bornstein, one thing that people have pointed to coming out of COVID-19 right now is this, how telehealth has seemed to really, really accelerate it, and that's seen as a good thing. Do you see it as a good thing?
It's great, and I see it as a very good thing, and I think it's one of those things that it should have probably happened on a larger scale a long time ago, but necessity being the mother of invention and all. So I have a couple of concerns about telemedicine, one of which is the payment. You know, we sort of live in a patchwork, and this has been mentioned before in this conversation, we sort of live in a patchwork of different insurance companies, and each one has its own policies about payment, et cetera, et cetera. And so my concern is that many, many practices have really ramped up very quickly to their credit to provide telehealth services, but there's some question about how long the payment parity for that is going to continue. So my concern is that these practices are going to be all ready, and then the payment will go away. And I have to say, Medicare, I'm pretty impressed how quickly Medicare really moved to change its longstanding policy about not covering telehealth services on parity with in-person. And so our federal government was able to move very quickly to do that, and have to give kudos. And also Texas Medicaid, and again, to Elena's point, Medicaid is a good thing. They're now covering well-child visits for pediatricians, and that's a really important, via telemedicine.
All right, Dr. Sue Bornstein is with the Texas Medical Association. Elena Marks is the President and CEO of the Episcopal Health Foundation. Ken Yanda is the founder of the Texas-based healthcare consultancy Wild Blue Health Solutions. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Ken Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.